Is that not what we all think the book of Revelations is about? Star Wars, you know? And I hate to start this sermon series on Revelation with a disappointment, because so many televangelists and teachers, you know, and fictional book writers has said it's all about the end of the world and all this thing that's going to happen, right? Guess what? It's not. In fact, if you read the book that way, you're going to and you're all going to read it, correct? Because as we go through this series, it's not going to do me good to talk about it if you don't read it. So I'm hoping you're going to read it, even though you may not understand it, but you will at the end of this. So it isn't like it's got an encrypted message that tells you exactly what's going to end in the end times. It is not like that decoded message on the back of cereal that your kids and your grandkids get. And actually, the story is encompassed in the very first description of God when they say that God is the one who is, the God who was, and the God who is to come. That's really the roadmap of when you go to read Revelations, you know? Talking about God and God's plan throughout time. All three elements are existing in Revelations, and you have to watch for it in order to understand it. The other thing about Revelation is this: you don't always get what you expect that you're getting. You know, for example, when you read Revelations through 5, verses 5 to 6, which I'm sure you're going to read this week, right? John is sitting there. And he knows he's about to see the Lion of Judah. So he turns around and he looks to see it, and he's thinking he's going to have this ferocious lion with his huge teeth and roaring. And what does he see? A bleeding lamb of Judah, right? Revelations is a book that's written in what we call apocalyptic writing. People have made it sound like it's writing only about the end times, but it's a style of writing. You see a little bit of that in Ezekiel when he's talking about his visions as well. This form of a writing contains the same messages and truths as you find in the Gospels and the Epistles, except you have to read it differently, you know. John likes to write in exaggeration. Have you ever seen one of those political cartoons where they really blow up the figure and make it look disproportionate? Do you know what I'm talking about? Well, that's what John is doing here. He uses familiar words and images, but then maybe, you know, he'll use words like tails and locusts and hair and teeth, those kind of words, you know, but he'll combine them and enlarge them so they're outside everyday reality, and you think, well, how could that possibly be? For example, here's another example in Revelations 9, just to give you an idea. He says this, he says, in appearance, the locusts were like horses equipped for battle, and on their heads is what looked like crowns of gold, and then they had hair like women flowing down, and their teeth were like lions' teeth that were there, and they have tails, but they're like scorpions, right? And in their tails is the power to harm people in the next 5 months. Would you like to explain that to me? Nah. So you can't read Revelation in your normal, literal way, because you're never going to understand it. So to study it, we have to do something that, you know, as we get older, we don't do so often. It's called use your imagination and let it run. The symbols and the images aren't going to work if you're a sage. No. If you are one of those people that just has to have the details and all the facts of what's going on, because this language is based on feeling it in our minds and our hearts. And while it presents John as a seer, and that's what we'll begin to talk about next week, getting a revelation from God, these visions are way too vivid. They're way too powerful for him to put in everyday language. And so he is like a poet. Anyone here ever read poetry? Right, with these huge descriptive words, and he wants to present these visions that he said in a new and in sometimes very shocking way, so he startles the hearer and gets their attention, but not only their attention, to get their emotions going on what's going on. He wants to bring the emotions to light, so he's what I would call the ultimate storyteller. He's telling the story with these vivid images. He's telling the story in such a way that at times your listener's heart's going to skip a beat. He wants you to like have goosebumps when he's painting this picture of this awesome cosmic adoration of God at the throne with that's going on. He wants you to feel sweat running down your back when you hear about the martyrs and their blood running and cascading against the landscape. He wants you to have a knot kind of forming in your stomach when he has the harlot who's cackling, right? And she's mixing this blood of martyrs so that they can get drunk on it to think, oh, right. He wants you to find yourself breathless when you see this vista of the cosmic universe that he's painting for John, right? He wants you to find yourself in the story. And it's a little bit, I think, like teaching biology in a way. You ever take biology where you have to read all the charts? Anybody ever see the movie Fantastic Journey? Some of you are much too young for that, I understand. But this was a story. There was a scientist that's called Benz, and he finds a way that he can reduce everything to very small miniature. Well, he gets a blood clot in his brain, and they want to save him. So what they do is they go ahead and they put three people in a ship, they miniaturize, and they shoot it into his body. And they go traveling throughout the... Now you're beginning to know this story? They begin traveling through the body in this submarine, and they work through the heart, they see tobacco in the lungs, they get to sail through this inner ear, they go past this deadly antibodies, and they're fighting them in there, right? And they make it to the brain, and they do remove the clot, and they save him, don't they? So let me ask you this. If you were learning biology, which way would be better to learn? Let me try that again. If you were doing biology, which would be easier to learn? Reading it in the textbook or taking that amazing journey through the body and learning all the body parts? Yeah, the journey really would be. Okay, which brings us to the next question. After you've taken this amazing journey, how would you write about it? Could you just say, and then we traveled through the inner ear, then we did this? Would that capture and encapsulate how exciting it was and what it was like to actually be doing all those things? No, it wouldn't, right? Now you know why John chose to write this book the way that it is. He wanted you to actually have this fantastic journey with him that God gave to him to see. So what's the contents of this apocalypse, you might ask? Well, apocalypse actually means revealing. That's where the name of the book came from. And it means revealing, and I always think to myself, well, what are you revealing? Well, among that messages is the fact that we still have a God-centered universe, that God is still in control, and that what God is doing is way beyond the limited view that we have. And this is what John's original audience is staking their lives on, the fact that God is in control and that something ultimately will happen. As I tell people, I've read the Bible, God wins at the end. But you have to understand, at the time that John's audience was living, there's no way they thought that that could be true, you know? It seemed like their whole world was anything but God-centered. And I think there's times in our lives that we think the same thing. How could our world be God-centered when all the things that are going on are going on. The shootings, the killings, you know, the people dying of diseases. How could it be God-centered? So John is given this task. He's given this task of pulling off the mask of what's going on in the world and revealing the world as we see it as a fraud. That's never going to bring us contentment, that's never going to bring us happiness, that we keep sticking our lives in, saying that it's going to do, right? But John's a prisoner on Patmos, and we'll talk more about that next week. And so he really can't see it. Because you know, when you're out there and you're among the culture, can you see that the world is God-centered? You can't, right? So he tells John in chapter 4, go up on a higher plateau. Go up. I want you to get to a different place so that you can get a different perspective. A different perspective of what's going on in the world. Because we can't see God's plan for our lives, can we? When we're here and among it. And sometimes we have to get that different perspective, right? We have to get a different perspective that sustains our hope in times of trouble to know that God is here with us. So as we begin our journey this week, and we'll be journeying over the next 4 weeks through Revelation, we need to remember a few things. The first one is, we're entering a foreign land. It's like we're reading somebody's email from years and years and years ago, right? So we can't impose what I call our contemporary viewpoints, our values, our definitions of what we think things are. We can't impose it on what John the seer is writing for us, right? So it must be, means that we have to know what Revelation's historical, what was precedence is, what's going on in society, what is John talking about, what's the cultural background. We have to know that. We have to recognize that it's not written to us, is it? It's written to that first century audience. Does not mean there's not truths there for us. In fact, we hope to find those truths for us. But to remember, it's the first century problems with the early Christians that John is writing about, right? We can't say, oh, I know what 666 means. Or we can't say, for example, oh yeah, that means that we are going to have that sign of the beast. Some people are. It's going to be, you know, one of those things that they can read from the satellite that's under our skin. You've heard that before, right? That's what Revelation says, right? That's what we've heard. The first century original listener, do you think that they would have understood computer chips under the skin? I don't think so. So, but when you start going down that road, you do miss this original message that still holds truth today for us. Second thing we have to remember is, remember, all the way through this, John is using different literary methods just to get the attention of the listeners while he's going through. You got to remember that the majority of the people that were going to hear this couldn't read. So all of this is a huge story, as I mentioned before, he's telling them, because they can't read it. So you have to listen to it like somebody is telling you a story. In fact, if you have Revelation on CD, or if you want to go and listen to it on the internet, I'd recommend that you hear it. Hear as the first century audience would have heard, all right? So remember, he's using metaphors. Remember, he's doing repetition. He does a lot of repetition. Remember, he's exaggerating everything to get your attention, right? So we have to remember that John has stitched together a story to tell us about God's plan. Remember that John used patterns. There's one pattern that becomes evident from the very beginning. It's his use of the number 7. He organizes his thoughts and messages around these patterns as we're going through it. There's 7 letters that are written. There's 7 churches that are written to. There's 7 seals. There's 7 bowls of wrath. 7 is incorporated throughout Revelations. You know, there's certain creatures. The Lamb has 7 characteristics. So when there's a repetition of numbers, what do you suppose that means? pay attention, right? And in this case, for John, 7 is not just a numerical value. It's a quality. And that quality means holiness. There's an extra emphasis for these people, these things, these churches. Whenever that comes up, it says pay attention to the holiness, about what he's talking about here. And the number three things we need to remember is, throughout Revelation, John is connecting the old stories of the Old Testament with the stories that he's writing. In fact, he's betting that his audience knows those stories, right? And so as you go through here, you will notice things like, for example, he will take the old story from Exodus of Pharaoh and how many plagues? Yeah. And he gives us seven new plagues that are going on, you know, in Revelation chapter 8. You'll see that now. Say, oh yeah, there was that, right? And finally, we have to remember that Revelation is talking about God's nature and is talking about our relation, all of humanity's relationship to God, to the cosmos, and to each other. It speaks to God's actions within history, framed by the past, the God who was, the present, the God who is, and the future, the God who is to come. And each one of these truths that John's going to tells us something more about the God that we worship. It's about finding these story truths that are embedded in here and where it intersects with our lives. And sometimes those intersections will comfort us, as they did the first century audience. It's about finding the stories that intersect with our lives where there's pain. And it's as well as there was pain from the Romans that were going on for the people in the first centuries. And so that when there's pains or we need to bring about change, it'll challenge us to have hope and to push on when we're going through that, you know? So I'm hoping that as we go through this next week, you'll begin to read Revelation, read the first six chapters, which we'll be talking about, begin to talk about next week, right? And if you do so, I think this sermon series will be much more meaningful to you. Now, there is one scary thing about Revelation. Not for you, but for me and Doug, maybe, I'm thinking. And this is where it was a warning that it gives to those who kind of preach on Revelation. It says this, if anyone adds to these words of prophecy, God will add to that person the plagues described in this book. And if anyone takes anything away from the words of the book of this prophecy, God will take away that person's share in the tree of life and then that holy city which is described in the book. So with fear and trepidation, we begin our Revelation journey this week, revealing more about our God of holiness that we worship. When I think about a holiness, I think there's times in all of our lives that we get so caught up being a friend of Jesus that we forget all about the awe and the mystery of this God that we serve, that holiness of God. And I love it where John in Revelation 4 wrote this, I saw a throne in heaven and someone was sitting on it, and the one sitting on the throne was as brilliant as gemstones, and the glow of emeralds circled his head like a rainbow. And day after day and night after night, they were worshiping, saying, holy, holy, holy is the Lord God, the Almighty, the one who always was, who is, and who is to come. You are worthy, O God, to receive our glory and honor and power. Holy, 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 Lord God, Almighty. And so they sang. Holy.